welcome to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims, live here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. If you have any questions or any comments about the program today, please call 740-383-9944. I have a couple announcements for you today, starting with Child Evangelism Fellowship Luncheon and Silent Auction. Benefits the Good News Club. This takes place Saturday, March the 7th, 2020, at Cornerstone Alliance Church, 2010 Marion Marysville Road. Doors open at 10:30. If you are an early bird bidder, and the event ends at 2 p.m. Remember, this is a luncheon. Donation for lunch is $10. And if you would like to give a financial gift to CEF or support a table, please call Cheryl Lee, 740-262-0939. And we're going to have a fun time there this Saturday afternoon. That telephone number again is 740-262-0939. And her name is Cheryl Lee. If you're paying by check, please make it payable to CEF, any donations. Also, Master Urban Farmer Thursday, March the 19th through April 16th. They're going to be starting gardens for this spring. This event takes place at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Mays Community Temple. Location, 801 Bennett Street, Marion, Ohio. There's no cost to register online. go.osu.edu/write Marion Urban Farmer or call 740-223-4040. If you're interested in helping to bring the garden to fruition. Also, let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio, 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio, 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They will be having free produce starting in April, and I will update with you on the exact date. Inspect Ohio, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you. Location, LaRue, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-0939. And I'd like to start my show with a thought for today, and it is titled Cherished Soul. Greet life with enthusiasm and confidence by constantly maintaining the awareness of how cherished you are. Now I can turn my attention to my guest for today, Brad DeCamp. And how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And Brad is the executive director of the Adam H. Board of Crawford and Marion County, Ohio. He deals with mental health and addiction services. And I've already said, how are you, Brad? But I was noticing on the internet that you have 7 job positions listed under your name. What all are you doing?
Oh, it's only 7 this time. It's been a busy time, and we're looking forward to continuing to do some good work and focus on different things that can hopefully improve the overall health of our community.
That's good. That's good. You have any new stats for us today?
We continue to see the So I'll talk a little bit about not opiates, but we'll talk about illegal opiates, but prescribed opiates. One of the things that we continue to see is that Marion County does have a higher than average rate of prescriptions per person. Mm-hmm. So if you adjust for population, our rate tends to be pretty high when compared to counties close to us. And while most counties, at least for the last full year, so that would have been probably 2018, they've just are preparing to release the 2019 numbers. But for 2018, most counties saw a 20% reduction in terms of the number of opiates prescribed per person, and Marion County only saw about a 10% reduction. So the good news is they went down. They didn't go up, so that's definitely a positive thing. But I think we're still trying to understand what are the dynamics and things or the factors that are not having it go down quite as much as we see with some of the other counties.
Right. So are you saying prescription opioids is higher than street drugs? Or being able to have access to it?
I think what we've seen over probably going on at least a year, maybe longer, is we started to see more of a move away from heroin and more towards meth availability. Mm-hmm. Right now, meth is definitely, I would say, more available. Cocaine also to a certain extent as well. The thing that's concerning is that in the common denominator with all this is fentanyl, which is the synthetic opiate that's so much more powerful than all the others, and it's still getting in. And frankly, there's just nothing safe to use right now for people. You've seen a couple weekends, especially in Franklin County down in Columbus here since we turned into the new year. We were talking before we went on air, getting used to 2020.
Right.
But just in the first few weekends of 2020, they've had a couple bad weekends in Franklin County. And, I think there have been people who, weren't aware that, they thought they were buying one thing and ended up getting something that they didn't know included fentanyl, and it could be deadly. And so we've seen rashes of that, not just in Franklin County, but in a couple other areas of the state as well.
Yeah, that is very dangerous, fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid of that, and a lot of things
mm-hmm.
when it comes down to drugs.
Sure.
You know? So I see that our marijuana, what do you call it? I knew the name of it. What does that dispensary, marijuana dispensary, is that for prescription marijuana only?
So they can't technically write a prescription for it because of how it is currently considered, the classification that it is. So it has to be a recommendation. But yes, you do have to have a recommendation from your physician in order to purchase from there.
Recommendation? What's the difference?
Well, I think prescription has a certain legal connotation to it, and because marijuana, at least at the federal level, is still considered a Schedule I substance, that is why they can't write prescriptions for it. So it has to be used in that context.
Okay, so we all know it's not legal. What do you think the chances are of marijuana becoming legal? I heard it's going to be back on the ballot.
I heard that as well. Yeah. I think that there's there's certainly people who will continue to push for it to be legal until it is.
Right.
And I don't know when that will happen. My guess is it's probably hopefully at some point still in the future. Not at our doorstep, but I think what you have seen is that in states where there have been the push to legalize medical marijuana, the recreational movement comes shortly thereafter, and, mm-hmm. and it seems to be just a matter of time before they do get that. But I don't know. It's Ohio is a really strange state.
Okay.
It's politically it can be strange sometimes, and I don't know. It's I will say that there is a fairly organized prevention effort that seems to hold a lot of political weight when it comes to legalization. So it could be that they could firewall that off for still some time to come.
Ohio has a lot of prisons too.
They do. Yes, they do.
And they incarcerate a lot of men for marijuana, young and old.
Yes.
Possession or maybe selling or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
And I know they have to keep their numbers up because a lot of those are individually owned,
mm-hmm.
personalized prisons. And I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because out of all the drugs, it is, it seems to be the least mm-hmm. harmful out of them. Are you in favor of that move or not?
I'm not in favor of legalization, no. What we don't have is we don't have research. And I think really that's the thing to me that's missing is, you know, we have, you certainly have strong factions that believe one way or the other. And so, but what we don't have is something definitively that tells us, in the sense of doing something by like the Food and Drug Administration or something like that, and being able to say one way or the other. So I would say that I'm not in favor of legalization, but I also feel like it warrants further analysis. And I do wish that there could be some impartial, unbiased scientific observations really about, you know, what some of the claims are. Does it help? Does it hurt? And,
right,
and go
right.
from there.
You'd think after all this time they would have something to show.
you would. But and hopefully we will get to a point where there's at least an acknowledgement of, you know, we do need to have that type of information before we can make that decision. But I do think you're right. I think there is going to continue to be a push for recreational.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I know maybe one or two people who have the medical
mm-hmm.
marijuana, but it seems to help them with anxiety,
mm.
you know, and being so anxious and things like that. Quiet.
Yeah.
You know, it quiets a person down. They're not so fast to move around, you mm-hmm. know, so I guess it would depend on what they would be using it for.
Right.
You know. But I think some of the sentences are just outrageous.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I wish there was another way that they could deal with marijuana, you know. But maybe that's coming too.
Yeah, and I think it's really just looking, I think the penalties, it's probably a time to just reevaluate those, I think, across the board and say, does what the legislature passed whenever those went into effect, do those still stand the test of time and based on what we've learned? Through research or other methods, other information that we might have, does that still ring true today? And if it doesn't, then, you know, it might be time to just, you know, reevaluate that whole process.
Right. Well, that's good. Do you think that the stats are different for overdoses?
The unofficial numbers it looked like for 19, based on what I had seen recently, looked like they had gone down a little bit, which
okay.
is a good thing.
Yeah.
Obviously one loss of life is too many. But we've been fairly aggressive this year in both, Marion and Crawford counties in terms of trying to work with our partners at the health departments and do training. We do a regular training with Marion Public Health. Actually, we had one today. We trained three individuals over there. What we've been trying to do more recently is instead of having a training where we say, hey, we're going to be here, you come to us, it's more of a trying to identify where populations of people will be. Like we have one at the Salvation Army, and we had a really good turnout for that. And we trained a lot more people at that one than we have at our regular standard monthly trainings. And so I think part of what we're trying to do is identify whether it's a business, we've done that to businesses, or other community events where we know people will be coming into so that we can make that available to them. I think that's a more effective way to reach people. I think we may have reached our peak in terms of saying, hey, come to us. I think now we've got to go to the community.
Well, that's good. Have you gone to Whirlpool with that program?
I don't believe we've gone specifically to Whirlpool. I want to say, I know Wilson Bohannon had approached us and a few other businesses. So, we've certainly, we're open to that. We just got another interest from somebody today. I can't remember what the business was, but mm-hmm. yeah.
Probably so because, you know, they say they have a hard time keeping people fulfilling these jobs or keeping these jobs, and you know a lot of it has to do with drugs. They're too high, or
mm-hmm.
when they get there to get high,
mm-hmm.
you know, they don't have to go through these screenings, metal detectors, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that would be a help or not. I know a lot of stores are incorporating those type of devices where people can be screened when
yeah.
they go in and out. I don't know how expensive that would be, but it's a thought.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, like you said, maybe it's going down. Maybe
mm-hmm.
it was a fad
mm-hmm.
we were going through.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say is that just as a concern is, you know, again, is until we get a better handle on what we need to do to control the flow of fentanyl and make sure that that's not getting into the substances, it's just going to be risky. And one of the things I've said recently, and a good friend of mine that I used to work with in Columbus has said, is that there's just not really anything safe to use right now. So it's important to recognize that. And if you're someone who, you know, has been using and you're thinking you're just going to use a different substance, maybe because you've not heard of there being risk of fentanyl being in it, there's still risk that it could be, that it could have some type of cross-contamination or have been cut with fentanyl, and that could still be lethal.
And they wouldn't even know it.
They would not know, yeah.
That's scary.
Very scary. Yeah, it is, and it's just a risky time, and you know, certainly that's why we want to make sure that we do have, that we're vigilant, that we're working with our partners and making sure that we're providing Narcan. And then also, one of the things we've been doing recently is also reaching out to folks who may have overdosed and then been revived and then cleared at the emergency department and then sent home, just to make sure that they've got support, or at least they make sure they're aware that they know what the local resources are and that we're connecting them and making sure that people do care about them. And
that's true.
Yeah, and so we've been trying to do more of that recently too.
I was going to ask you about that, because some people say that addicts are being helped too much to stay in that condition, and once they're out or OD to a point where maybe they've died and they have a way to bring them back, or clean needles are provided for them, or a safety net for them to even process the drugs internally. So what could you say to those people who are concerned about that?
Well, I think first of all, anything that we do, it's not that we're giving people the green light to continue to do what they're doing, but it's trying to meet them where they are. And an individual, there's a process that's called an addiction. It's called stages of change. And basically, the way that works is you've got people who, you know, may have no idea or no desire to quit. They're just doing what they're doing. So they're not thinking about it. But the idea is to get them to at least start thinking about it.
Right.
And then once they've thought about it for a little bit more, then it becomes, well, then what can you do to get them thinking about maybe committing to a plan of when to stop? And then once they stop, then helping support them through that. So it's very unusual for somebody to go through all those different steps immediately and spontaneously recover.
I'm sure it would take time.
Yeah, it does take time. And so part of what we do is to say, yeah, we don't, you know, condone that behavior, and certainly we're not telling people, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. I think what we're trying to do is use the techniques that kind of help the individual discover that on their own. And some people are quick to recognize it, and they can get on board and begin to make the changes they need. Other people, it takes a little bit longer time, unfortunately.
Well, I guess so. And I guess I don't know what the answer is.
Mm-hmm.
I was married to an addict, you know, years ago, and his life ended when he was 34 years old. And that was, whoa.
Yeah.
92, you know, and nothing you said or done made any difference, you know.
Right.
But I think when it came down to him losing everything that he thought he had, his family, his wife, and things like that, and maybe someone else taking over what he had, you know, I think he made a decision to give it up.
Mm.
But he turned his life over to Christ, you know, to God. And no rehab, even though he had signed himself into rehab two or three times previously to just keep his job, you know, but it was like, it really wasn't real. It was just a facade of him trying to hold on to his job and things like that, but he was still using, you know. And how do you deal with women and children that may be in that situation, as I was?
Well, it's very traumatic, and you know, that's a significant loss, and it's something that takes, you know, time to process and work through. And I think the best thing that we can do is to be there and make sure that we're supporting those who survive and live on as best we can, because they're going to need that help as well. And it's a big adjustment, and it's something that definitely leaves an imprint on not just the kid, but also the spouse, family members, and it touches so many different lives. So I think collectively what we have to do is just not forget that there are other lives that have been touched by that, and do what we can to work with them and make sure we're supporting them as best we can with our service that we have in the community.
That's true, because it was like living a nightmare. You know, when I couldn't wake up out of, you know, like just, it was everywhere, and it was when, especially when it's hidden, you know, and you see the responses they make, or the attitudes they may have, or their conduct, and you don't know where it's coming from. You know, then when you find out where it's coming from, it just breaks your heart, because you cannot compete with it.
Right.
You cannot compete with an addict or take the place of their drug. You know, you just can't.
Yeah, and a lot of times I think, too, what we don't find out maybe as early as we need to is, you know, what has driven them to that point in their life? What has happened to them that made them feel like they needed to have this substance in their life that either filled a gap that they didn't feel like they had, that got them acceptance or something like that, or that maybe made them not feel, you know, maybe that took that feeling away and took a painful part of their lives away from them. And then from there, it transforms into something completely different. But I think that's part of what we're trying to do, too, is recognize the traumatic experiences that occur both to adults and children, and recognizing that for kids, when you look at those traumatic experiences, what you see is that they're more likely to experience hopelessness, they're more likely to be depressed, maybe have suicidal ideation. And then with adults, what you see is more risky behavior. You'll see the tobacco use increasing, alcohol, other drugs, and things like that. So yeah, really being on top of and uncovering that. And like I said earlier, it takes time. You know, in order for people to share those traumatic events, you know, they don't just throw that out there to everybody.
No, they don't. I think I was out of the norm, because I did. I thought the more people I tell, the better he would turn around and not do it. Wow, what I went through during those times, you know, but it didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
You know, because back then a lot of people didn't care.
Yeah, and you hear the phrase tough love from time to time, and really what that can translate into is good self-care, because you know what you have to do is you have to make sure that you're able to move on, and it's not that you're being cold towards that person, but you know, there comes a point where you have to, especially if there's kids involved, you've got to be there for them. And in order for you to be there for them, if that means that you have to distance yourselves from that person and that behavior, then that's what you have to do.
That's true. That is so true. When you give up and understand there's nothing I can do, you know, and then you see, I got to go. I got to move on. I'm done with this, you know. Someone else will have to deal with it, or they will have to deal with it. Somebody just won't be me anymore, you know.
Right.
And that's a hard decision to come to, because you want to be able to do something, you know, and you don't know what to do.
Yeah, and you don't know what to do, and as much as you may want to do it, they still may not. They still may not be at the place where they're ready to enter recovery.
They look at you like, well, who are you, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm grown. I do what I want to do in my life.
That's
yes,
it.
You know.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that point, you're right, it is your life, you know. But we want to be able to reach out to those who are struggling with addiction.
Absolutely.
Because I think we all struggle with something.
We all do, and whether it's, you know, something where, you know, somebody is using to mask some pain or to, you know, not feel a certain trauma or whatever the case may be, it's still something that we all deal with. We all have senses of loss over certain things,
true.
And, you know, may go back to things that may have even occurred when, you know, before we were old enough to understand them, but that leaves an imprint. That's something that sometimes difficult to sort out.
It is. Life is difficult.
It is. It is.
Let alone have all these other little problems popping up, right?
That's right.
I tell you, life. I tell my grandchildren, which are grown now, it looked it fun or easy, you know, when you're sitting back as a young child growing up. It looks fun, easy because someone else is doing it, but it's your turn.
Right.
It's not so easy, you know.
No, it's not.
They find that out. Wow, how'd you do it?
Yeah. And, you know, I think your example, too, about, you know, when we were talking about the tough love and you know, that type of thing. I mean, ultimately what you hope for is, so if it's a relationship type of situation, you know, hopefully at some point when that person does enter recovery, it's not that that you will reunite, but it's that person, you can still be there and support them. And you might reunite. That's not to say that you will or you won't, but it's just that, you know, they need to find their path. And
that's true.
And once I think they get to the other side of that, I've seen situations where people can go back and see and be very thankful of what maybe their former spouse tried to do to help them. And then try to, you know, co-parent, and if there are kids involved, as best you can.
Yeah, the children need both parents.
Yes.
No matter, I was watching divorce today, divorce court.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the marriage was over, it was very important that they come together and parent those children where they wouldn't be lost or going through being traumatized or, you know, go through depression.
Right.
You know, because dad doesn't live in the house anymore. And like I was saying, it's just so many issues we deal with that as adults.
Yes.
And as counselors, and you and the lead position that you're in, how does your family feel about what you're doing?
I think generally they feel okay about it. I know it's been challenging, and you know I you know will be honest. I when I was younger guy, I was married once before, and so we did go through divorce, and I look back now, and you know, I am very sorry to my adult kids that I wasn't able to get along better with my ex for a long time, and
right.
And I can see how that how they struggled, and I'm happy to say that we're in a better place now, and you know, their mom and I are in a better place now, but it took a long time. And so I do feel bad about that, but I think that they see that you know, we're trying to make a difference and work with kids and families and help as many people as we can. And I think that there's some interest that they have, I think, because of their own personal experiences about maybe working in the same field and trying to help other people because of what they may have experienced.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. I think they would want to reach out because it's one of those things, you know, it's indescribable because everyone suffers, and you're a counselor and probably took a lot of time away from your family, you know, and a lot of things just get under your skin, you know, and you just really don't know how to cope with it, you know, share with your family. I still feel like I have a hard time sharing stuff.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, and that's part of the, I think, what people don't understand generally, whether you're talking about someone who's in treatment for addiction or mental health, it's that, you know, really you have to, that trust is so important to have. It's really what moves the needle to help with good outcomes and help people move along in a good, you know, therapeutic relationship. But it's not something that's guaranteed after one session or two sessions. It really takes time. And,
right.
You know, if there's court systems involved that are putting pressure on the situation, that's, you know, can be something that can also make it somewhat more difficult to achieve that relationship. In some cases it is genuine and, you know, that connection is there between the therapist and the client. And in other cases it may be forced, and so it may have to be sorted out a little bit more.
That's true. But for, you know, however it may turn out, it's for the best for everybody, you know. And some things, like you say, you can't put back together.
Right.
But then some things have a way of coming back together, you
know.
And everyone benefiting
yes.
from it.
Yes.
You know. So I saw where you said, I find it frustrating that, finish that sentence.
Oh.
I saw it on Facebook.
What did I say?
You said, I find it frustrating that, I didn't have time to go on it.
Oh.
What it was.
I don't know. Was it recently?
I think it was.
Okay.
Maybe. Well, what really frustrates you about this whole situation about the drugs and being addicted and all that kind of stuff?
I think part of it is just thinking that we're not maybe able to make as much forward progress, and I would like to see the numbers obviously be smaller, and you know, whether you're talking about overdose deaths or even suicides, really, just, you know, different things. But it could have been something completely different, or that I could have been frustrated back on that particular day. But I think that's what I continue to try to drive towards, is, you know, what are the things, and frankly, the Adam H. Board is really, we're you know, lead on many of these different things, but we're not the only system that's involved in a lot of these cases, and we do have to, you know, work with our partners and try to work within the their criteria and other requirements that they have in their systems, and try to come together for good outcomes. So I think on the whole, it continues to drive me to try to learn more and improve and see what we can do and help as many people as we can. I'll have to look that up. I wonder what I was frustrated about that day.
I didn't have time to go through it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Was it on the board's page?
I think so.
Okay.
I looked up your name.
I'll look it up.
Try to get little stuff on.
I'll look it up.
You know, to present on the show.
Sure, so, sure.
Yeah, and now when someone overdoses, and they pass away and you can't bring them back, do you classify that as suicide?
So that's an interesting question. Generally, there is an investigation process that looks to see what is what's at the scene. I do think that there's been some speculation that there are people who may have there may be evidence that they intentionally overdosed. I don't know how widespread that is, but I do think that there is some thought being given to the whole notion of what's the interplay between really being true accidental overdose and what is someone who died by suicide.
Right.
So there is an element of that, and certainly I think the coroners and law enforcement and those individuals who are going to be, you know, looking at that scene firsthand are going to be looking for to try to discern that.
I wondered about that, you know, especially someone that has been brought back by Narcan. And they do it again, you know.
Right.
They OD again. And I've heard that there have been several cases of that, that they've been brought back two or three times maybe, you know. So what do you and it makes you wonder, well, how much more, you know, can you take? Or
yeah, and generally I think the conventional wisdom is that if someone, you know, overdoses and nearly dies, that should be their wake-up call.
You'd think so, right?
You would think. And I think for some people that is the case. And I think for other people, you know, there's based on where they are and their addiction history and their active use. I mean, clearly they're actively using at that point. So it's something that it's frustrating. I know it causes a lot of burnout. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about a bit more, I think, in the future is, you know, with those first responders and other people who are working on the front lines, whether it's child welfare or schools or, you know, other professions that are dealing with this, healthcare, I think, would be another one. You know, how do you deal with that and help those individuals process through? Because it's challenging and it leaves an imprint on them, you know, as it does with the families. It's a little bit different, but it's still there.
It is. It's challenging for the entire community.
Right.
You know, because you have break-ins in your car, break-ins in your home,
right.
You know, and people stealing from you, and the youth are on the rise as far as crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if it's drug-related or what's going on with some of our youth nowadays. Even just watching the news, 14-year-olds killing people over cell phone and all that kind of stuff. What is, you know, you wonder, what is going on? They don't have anything to do. What are their parents doing? Or what should they have done that they didn't do? You know,
right.
Raising their children, you know. And we live in dangerous times.
It's a challenging time for sure. Yeah, and we were also talking a little bit about social media before we went on, and the impact there that that has on young people, and certainly that creates a venue where certainly an unhealthy things can occur online, and kids can be bullied and put in a bad position, and there's a lot of negative that can come out of that for sure.
Yeah. Now, when you look at your statistics, mm-hmm. does it look like more people under the age of 16 are trying out drugs or experimenting? Is that on the rise, or is just crime?
You know, I think I would say this. I don't think we see a lot of kids that are trying things like heroin, cocaine, meth. I mean, that's not something that you see a lot with the kids. The big thing with kids, really, it's not even tobacco anymore. It's the vaping. Vaping is really the huge issue, and I think you also do still see some pretty significant use of marijuana. But yeah, the vaping is the one where they very cleverly marketed this as being more healthy than cigarettes and then tobacco, and we're just now kind of getting to see more, I think, evidence of how unhealthy it really is, especially for the young people.
I know, and they came out with that, what is it, Juul?
Juul, yep.
Oh my, mm-hmm. And my daughter, she vapes, and I thought, please stop.
Yes, exactly.
Please stop.
Yeah.
She's like in her 30s, but still, please stop.
Well, yeah.
The one I'm using is not like what they're using now. It's that Juul thing, you know.
That's right. Oh, it's only vapor, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is steam, right?
That's it. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were effective with their marketing, and I think that even if you look at adults, I think that there's still a significant portion of adults who look at it and see it as a safer alternative still. And maybe it is, but to what degree is safe? I mean, is it 5% safer, 10% safer? I mean, that's the part I think that we're still trying to figure out. But certainly I think if you look at the impact that it has on the young people, it's definitely not as healthy as I think they would have you believe.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I was visiting her last year in her apartment, and it made me sick, her vaping.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I had to get out of there. It was almost like I had to run
to
get fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's all that safe. And I think because they think it's safe and they say it's safe, they do it more than they would if they were smoking cigarettes. You know?
Yeah, and I think that where we were successful in terms of you know, telling people about tobacco, I think that almost kind of contributed to a space where, like an e-cig or vaping, whatever terminology you want to use, the manufacturers, you had this other substance that wasn't that.
Right.
So we know that this is bad, but we're not that. So we've got to be, it's almost like, so since we're not that, we're better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they were, I do think though that my hope is that as more evidence comes out of, especially people, I think with kids, a lot of times you have an adult tell them something and, well, I'm, you know, when you're that age, you know everything. You don't, but you do. And so your thought is going to be, well, this is an adult. They're telling me this. I know better. I'm stronger than they are. I'm better than they are. I'm not going to do that. But then when you see someone who's maybe a year or two older than them or 3 years, then it's like, okay, well, I knew this dude. I mean, he and I used to hang out together, and now he's had this problem. Now, they still may have some thought of, well, he did this or he did that, and I'm not going to do that. But at least it's putting it more on their level.
That's true. I don't like it. I don't like it because she had convinced me it was better than smoking.
Mm-hmm.
What those little cigars are called. I can't think of the name of them. Well, anyway, she told me it was safer than that.
Mm-hmm.
But nah, it's still smoke.
Yeah, it's something that's a foreign substance that's going into your lungs that's, you know, not typically or shouldn't be there in high concentrations the way that it is. And so ultimately, it's not going to be good.
So they also have like this fake marijuana in some of these stores, don't they?
Yeah, there's different types of substances that they have that kind of mimic that as well. So yeah,
how is that legal though?
Well, my guess is that they're it's some type of a one-off chemically, and so they're able to get around. And that's been the problem, I think, with a lot of drugs over the course of time, whether you're talking about methamphetamine and like the precursors. Like what they tried to do back when meth came through the first time was they tried to take the substances that you combine to make meth, mm-hmm. to mix it and make meth, to make those illegal. And then what the people were these people who are figuring this out are geniuses, I'm telling you. They're much smarter than I will ever be in my lifetime, but they know how to manipulate the chemicals to make it be different enough. So they make this analog, and if the law doesn't say that it's this chemical here or that chemical there, then it's legally, you can make the case that it's not the same thing. So if you don't have it just right, with that example that we were talking about, then there's probably a legal loophole and way people can get around the sentencing that we were talking about earlier and all that good stuff.
Right. Just keep filling up the prisons, which are overflowing, and now they're trying to find new places to put people. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Like you said, they're smart.
Yeah, I mean the people who figured out the marketing and like the whole thing with heroin. I mean, they started pulling back on heroin and putting more cocaine and methamphetamine, and really recognized where the demand was going to be, and so they got ahead of it. So yeah, just brilliant minds. Unfortunately, they're not being put to good use in that regard.
But you know what? If there's less heroin available, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, on the whole, I would agree with that. And I think that, I think part of why meth has picked up, though, is that they're still looking for something to use. So even though the body's going to react differently to heroin as it will with meth, it's a different reaction, different high. The other thing with that makes it really hard on law enforcement and healthcare, too, with meth is, as opposed to heroin. Heroin's a central nervous system depressant, so it's going to be rare, unless you've mixed something with something else, where you're going to have somebody that's going to be really agitated. They're going to be they're going to be depressed. Their central nervous systems, they're going to be a bit more lethargic. That's part of why, the overdose is what happens there is that their central nervous system gets so depressed that mm-hmm. they can't breathe.
Okay.
So, but with methamphetamine, it's the opposite. So it's really going to get you, it's a stimulant and it's going to get you up. But the challenge with that is that when you have someone who becomes intoxicated on meth, they're going to be displaying a lot of symptoms that even people who are seasoned and experienced can't tell if they're being truly psychotic, if they're having like a psychotic episode.
Really?
They can be very violent. They can be very, agitated and quite strong, almost superhuman type of strength. But that's the challenge, is you don't know. So if you're used to going in situations and overdoses where you've got someone who's just really out of it, as opposed to someone who might be out of it, but then they've got this other substance in their system that makes them really agitated and potentially, able to be more violent, then that makes it hard. You really don't know what you're walking into. And so it's hard for law enforcement, EMT, fire, and then, getting them to the hospital and trying to figure out what is the problem. Is it truly a mental health issue, serious mental health issue, or is it someone who is high on meth?
Like I say, we're living in dangerous times.
Indeed,
Brad.
Indeed.
So what's your vision for 2020?
Well, we're going to continue to work on some key priorities. I think we need to focus on prevention. That's going to be a big one for us that we're going to focus on. We talked about trauma a good bit today, and so we're going to focus on what we can do to help identify trauma, but also build resiliency. What are the types of things that we can help in both adults and kids, and trying to help them from a place of being more of the trauma perspective, to help them have the assets in their lives and things along those lines. And it's not going to be an easy journey, but I think that's going to be another thing. Another idea is this notion of working with our partners in the criminal justice system and trying to make sure that we do have both mental health and addiction services available to those who need that help. Because I know I hear a lot from our partners on the CJ side that while there are significant addiction issues, there's a lot of mental health issues too. So trying to figure out how we can make those services available to those folks who need them. And then lastly, this is a category that kind of includes some different things. It includes employment, it includes housing, it includes transportation. So kind of the things that aren't necessarily paid for by insurance or Medicaid or things like that. It's and but we know that in order to have for people to be stable, whether it's you know, and with a mental health condition or substance use disorder, or whatever the case may be, they've got to have some of these other things. Work can be a good thing for them, depending on where they are in their recovery journey. Obviously, people need a place to live. Mm-hmm. So I think it's looking at some of these other things. So those are the four things that for the rest of this year, we're going to be focusing on. And we will have our levy up in the fall. So we'll have that big item that we'll be dealing with as well as we begin to go through the summer and get ready for that.
I just thought about that little cigar, Black and Mild.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've seen those before.
Yeah. Black and Mild. She used to smoke those, and I thought, daughter, that's a cigar.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and then she went to that vaping thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I had, so my dad is a lung cancer survivor, and he's been, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer in 2001. And so I kind of had an experience as I was getting older, and so the last time I smoked was actually going on 11 years ago. And so I used to smoke cigars occasionally. And so, but I got to a point where my weight wasn't where it is today. And I noticed that I would smoke to a point and I could feel my heart almost like in palpitations. And so that didn't feel like a healthy place for me to be. So especially given my dad's history, I thought I need to cut this off and not have it be part of my life anymore. But yeah, it's been something that I've been without for a while.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm a lung cancer survivor.
Mm.
Same year.
Really?
2001.
Yeah. Wow. What are the odds of that?
I don't know where I was with it, but I had one cell, which was very deadly. Mm-hmm. My mother died of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in my lower right lobe, and they just cut it out.
So, interesting. That's what they were going to do with my dad when they went in, but they saw that he actually had some other lesions on the outside of his lungs. So they decided to just not take that part since it had spread at that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that actually ended up being a good decision.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was able to keep both and have full capacity, even though obviously he had some other stuff going on.
That's great. That's
yeah.
Wonderful. God is good.
He is. Absolutely.
He heals us.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And they told me I wouldn't live any more than 2 years.
Yeah. I think his 5-year life expectancy was like maybe 9-10%, something like that.
Yeah. Very low.
Yeah.
Very low. Because that lung is like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
So. I thank God for it. I really do.
Absolutely.
And it's a great testimony to give to other people because you can stop.
Mm-hmm.
You can stop. You can stop. Even, mine was more like secondhand.
Yes.
Being around it, you know, which is just as deadly as doing it yourself, you know, because you're breathing it. And people say, oh, that won't bother you. But don't listen to other people when it's about your health. Just move on, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I visited my daughter and that vaping. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I was so sick. I had the worst
headache. Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah.
And when I got home, I told her, I said, you know what? I barely made it home. She said, oh mom, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I won't do it again around you. Well, thank you.
Yeah. I know we're getting close on time, but the other thing I did, that you touched on there, and we didn't talk about this a lot, but I mean, obviously, addiction especially is it's a spiritual. There's a pretty heavy spiritual component to that, and I think one of the other things that was as we think about work for the rest of this year and moving forward beyond is how do we engage with the faith community to make sure that we're reaching as many people as we can, because it feels like there are certainly segments of the community that we're not effectively engaging with at this point, and so I want to take a look at that and think about how we might be able to do better with that moving forward.
That's a good idea, because out of all, when you've tried everything and people do it this way, when they've tried everything else, then they try Christ.
Mm-hmm.
They try the church, you know, but we need to try that first.
We need to try everything, I think. So, yeah, but absolutely. It's an important part, and people will acknowledge that. I mean, it's not necessarily, I just think there's a portion of this, you know, Christian faith aside, that you can just say it is a spiritual component of that, and people who move into recovery have that, I think, have that to deal with as well.
like seven steps of sobriety. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still faith-based.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people have come through that and succeeded. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brad, for coming.
Thank you, dear. Appreciate it. Always good talking to you.
Yes, it was good. And those of you who are listening, stay tuned for next week. You've been listening to Linda Sims here on A Voice of a People, WWGH 107.1 FM Radio. Until next time, be blessed.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion.